I welcome you this morning to session 314, Exploring the Book of Mormon. Our speaker this morning is Rod Meldrum. Rod is president of the Foundation for Indigenous Research in Mormonism. He's a researcher, author, lecturer on the scriptural and physical evidence indicating North America as the location where the Book of Mormon's history may have played out. He's the author of a book. You've got a copy there, Rod. Let's show folks your book. The Book of Mormon in America's Heartland. He'll be signing his book today between 1 and 2, just near the registration desk, and you can get the books at Benchmark. Thank you. So, Rod, go ahead. Right. Looking forward to hearing from you.
Thanks, Stephen. Appreciate that. Since we're few in numbers here, I'll let you kind of peruse the book if you kind of pass it around a little bit and check that out. Just out of curiosity, how many of you are already kind of familiar with this research? One? Some of you are a little bit, somewhat. Anybody else? Kinda? Not much? Okay. All right, well, basically, I'll just give you a very quick little introduction, actually, through Keith Merrill, who wrote and directed The Testaments and Legacy for the Church, and play this little video interview that we did with him about a year and a half ago at our national convention up at the Zermatt Resort up in Midway. We had about 400 plus people there at the presentation there. And here we have Keith Merrill.
I think the first presidency may have known about my passion for film and the fact that I was a filmmaker because I had directed a film called Mr. Kruger's Christmas, which had been produced through the Bonneville Communications Department of the church. So perhaps they had seen that film, perhaps they were aware. But I think the real awareness came because I actually asked for a meeting with the president.
Hold on just one second, I'm not sure why it's not synced up. It's weird. Sometimes it stops it. It's an issue.
If it does it, the sink's not that bad.
Yeah. Okay. Wasn't it? Okay.
I think the first presidency may have known about my passion for film and the fact that I was a filmmaker because I had directed a film called Mr. Kruger's Christmas, which had been produced through the Bonneville Communications Department of the church. So perhaps they had seen that film, perhaps they were aware. But I think the real awareness came because I actually asked for a meeting with President Hinckley with a plan to make an IMAX theater in downtown Salt Lake City that would show films about the history of Utah and of course include a lot about the development history of the church. And it was at that meeting that President Hinckley said, would you be willing to suspend that project because I have another project that I would like to talk to you about. And that project was Legacy. And that day he said, follow me. And I walked with him to the old Hotel Utah. It was being remodeled, looked like a bombed out bunker. Our shoes left dusty footprints in the powdered concrete. A shaft of light came in from the east across that great north wall. We stood in that theater and he said, or in what was the old ballroom, and said, in this space, I envision a magnificent state-of-the-art 70-millimeter theater. And on that wall, we will tell the story of our people. And then he sent me off to make the first of those films, Legacy. And I said, President Hinckley, what should it be about? And he said, that's your problem. But whatever we say about our heritage and about our history and about our legacy, I want people to feel the spirit. That was the mandate, and that was the first of the films. And then, of course, 10 years later, they called me back and asked me to do The Testaments. I love the movie. I think that the core message of the movie is intact regardless of where we shot it. The fact that we had so much fun with those wonderful feathers and pyramids and the biggest set ever built in the state of Hawaii in recreating Zarahemla as a Mesoamerican city. If I did it all over again, I would do it differently. But I would not change what the film is about. The film is about a testimony and a testament of Jesus Christ, another testament of Jesus Christ, and the reality of his divinity, the reality that he knows us, the reality of our journey, being blind, being led by faith, being healed by the Savior, and that definitive moment when we discover that he knows us, and he knows us by our name. That's the message of the testament. So it surpasses where we set the movie. I think that's kind of irrelevant. I've made jokes. I've said, look, I made the biggest, most expensive movie the church ever made, and I made it in the wrong place. But I didn't make the wrong movie. I think the movie was inspired. I think the testimony of Christ comes through, whether it's in the Hopewell Mounds of Ohio or whether it's in the jungles of Mesoamerica. It doesn't make any difference, because that wasn't what the movie was about. Now, if I'm ever asked to do a movie that's a documentary on the Book of Mormon, I'm excited to go to Ohio and rethink how we portray those people. And I hope that the audiovisual department will take seriously this new paradigm and seriously think about, in the CES movies, they may seriously want to begin to make a shift and be less definitive at first in terms of making it so Mesoamerican, and ultimately, as we get more research and as we get more confirmations, more evidences, eventually maybe shift and set it where I'm now beginning to believe that it all took place, and that's where the whole deal started, right? Near the Garden of Eden. The words of Jesus Christ and the words of Joseph Smith is what has completely shifted my paradigm. I don't know where these things took place. The church has no official position. President Fountain of Liberty and the Isaac King, we don't know where these things happen. I begin with that. But I've never been more invigorated or excited about realistic probabilities. I've always kind of thought, well, it's kind of a stretch to take the pre-Mayan civilization and kind of make it work. But you set it aside in the black box. But all of a sudden, things start to fit and gel, and I'm invigorated and excited and rereading the Book of Mormon, and a whole new movie is unfolding in my mind and my eye. I love the buffalo. I mean, the beasts, the migrating beasts that we feed on their carcasses, the buffalo. I mean, I love the buffalo. I would love the opportunity to do something really definitive for the church that could explore Book of Mormon story in the context of the North American setting. The scriptures and what prophets say when they're prophets. You can't get very far astray if that becomes the iron rod. You know, if you cling to what the scriptures say and what the prophets said when they're prophets, and what Joseph Smith says, you know, as the founding prophet, and I think that I think Joseph Smith knew way more than was ever recorded, and so I think we're so presumptuous to think that he made mistakes in the things that he said. I just think that's really bold and risky. But scriptures, what prophets say when they're prophets. Prophet Joseph Smith said, and what Christ himself said as recorded in scripture. I think if we cling to that, we can't go very far afield, you know. I mean, even if we're plastic man hanging onto that iron rod, you know, as long as we cling to it, you know, we can go out, we can explore lots of wonderful things. We've got to come back to that faith.
That's a little quick introduction, and I will give a much more detailed introduction here. Just one second. All right. I want to begin actually with a little maybe a disclaimer would be the right term for it. Okay. And that is that this research that I'll be talking to you about is not sponsored by or endorsed by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. It's been privately funded and privately done. And so so it is in support of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and the claims of the Book of Mormon. However, there's been a lot of ideas about where the Book of Mormon took place, and in fact, over 150 different geographies have now been proposed for Book of Mormon lands. And where did all that come from? And that's one of the questions that I have thought about an awful lot. My journey, if you will, on this in this project began actually in 2003, when I was at the conference center for April conference, and we were standing in line. It was after the Olympics, and there was all new protocol for security and so forth. So there's long lines outside. And we're standing there, and there was a great big sign that said, DNA proves the Book of Mormon is false. And for a while, I thought, well, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how that all comes about, and why is it that that people are thinking that DNA can actually disprove the Book of Mormon. So that at the time, I was working for a natural sciences textbook project, and had access to some of the top research libraries in the country, so I began a systematic research of why this was thought. And the answer to that is pretty simple, and that is that when they began doing DNA studies of Native American populations from Alaska all the way down through Central and South America, they were finding that they were primarily of Asiatic stock or Asiatic-based lineages called haplogroups. And they called them, they began with this, the haplogroups A, B, C, and D were the primary or founding haplogroups. Well, all four of these have been found over in Asia and links these lineages to Asiatic groups. But Lehi and his family, were they Asian? No, they were Semitic. According to the Book of Mormon, Lehi came down through the lineage of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and down through those lineages, which is a different, that's lineages that come from Shem rather than from Japheth, through as far as Noah's sons. And bottom line is that seven times in the Book of Mormon, there are claims that there would be a remnant of the house of Israel found on the promised land in the latter days. Well, this didn't bode well with those prophecies, okay? Because if the Book of Mormon is true, then you have this people that came from the Holy Land area, came and arrived here someplace in the Americas, and multiplied and replenished for at least 1,000 years as the Nephites, okay? But then continued on because the Lamanites were here as well, and they were not destroyed. We know that from the text of the Book of Mormon. So the bottom line is that where is this lineage? Where is this evidence? Is there any evidence? And that's really what I was focusing on. And as I began to do my research, I found that there were some very interesting things that were being found after 2003. A particular DNA type that was indicated by five specific markers in the DNA. It's called haplogroup X. And as they began to do more research on this, at first the reason why it didn't show up is that it was only found in certain groups up in the kind of the northeast United States and up into Canada, around the Great Lakes area. But they didn't know what really where it came from because they weren't finding any of it in Asia. In fact, to this day, they still have not found a group. They found in the Altain population over in Asia. They found some, but they have attributed that to much later conquests by I can't remember exactly how you pronounce it, but Genghis Khan is how we normally say it. But there's a better pronunciation of that. I was what's that?
Genghis Khan.
Genghis Khan. Okay, so anyway, so that was kind of coming from his conquest and his going into that area. But it has been actually traced back to, this haplogroup X has been traced back to the Druze population over in the Holy Land. And what's really significant is that, and I have to really condense this down because this presentation isn't about the DNA, there's a lot more to that. But bottom line is that found that there was actually a connection between the this haplogroup X DNA happens to also show up among people that are, it's very interesting. They're called the Iraqi Jews. Okay? And the Iraqi Jews are people who can trace their ancestry all the way back to 586 BC, when their ancestral people were removed by force from Jerusalem under King Nebuchadnezzar and taken back to Babylon as slaves.
Is that the John the Baptist sect?
What's that?
Is that the John the Baptist sect in Iraq?
I don't know what their situation is. In the journal articles, they don't talk about the John the Baptist sect. They just talk about Iraqi Jewish population. So the bottom line is that when they sequence DNA from 41 individuals from this Iraqi Jewish population, they have this DNA lineage or this DNA marker, these DNA markers. And because of Jewish marriage customs and traditions to not marry outside of your kindred, they haven't actually intermarried much, hardly at all, with the Iraqi population at large. And so they've kind of intermarried. So they kind of go, their family tree is going to go like that. And what that means is that it's actually maintained their genetic singularity very almost pure because of that. And so over this long period of time, these people are intermarrying with each other and isolated from other Jewish or Semitic populations, basically. And so they have had this DNA type. What's interesting, it's called haplogroup X, but what's interesting is that in 2008, geneticist Deborah Bolnick from the University of California at Berkeley obtained permission from the Native Americans in North America to sequence DNA directly from bones removed archaeologically from the mound of the Ohio and Illinois River Valleys, the ancient mounds there that date into Book of Mormon time frames. They're called the Mound Builders, and the Mound Builder civilization is an almost exact match to the Nephite civilization's time frames. But what's interesting is when she sequenced the DNA from 21 sets of remains of the Hopewell Mound Building civilization, they have the same five markers. They have haplogroup X DNA in North America. And what I found was really interesting as I continued on with this research is that when I wanted to find out, well, what did Joseph Smith know about this? And so the research wasn't quickly, it was over the course of many years, began to realize, and it's actually probably the simplest one, is that when Joseph Smith was commanded by the Lord in the Doctrine and Covenants, sections 28, 30, and 32, to take the gospel and the very first copies of the Book of Mormon after they came off the Grandin Press, the Lord said to Joseph Smith, I want you to go to the Lamanites. Now, some have claimed that that term Lamanites wasn't Joseph Smith's word. It wasn't the Lord's word, it was Joseph Smith's word. Well, if we believe that Joseph Smith was in fact a prophet of God, then that was God's word to Joseph Smith, and he wrote it down not once, not twice, but multiple times in those three chapters, those three sections. Who did they go see? Well, Joseph Smith immediately dispatched four missionaries, Oliver Cowdery, Peter Whitmer Jr., Pardee P. Pratt, and Ziba Peterson. And Pardee P. Pratt records in his autobiography the actual Indian tribes that they went to go and see. And it turns out that every one of the tribes that they went to go see are tribes which today harbor this haplogroup X type DNA.
What tribes are those, Rob?
The best way to explain that, as far as which tribes they are, there's over 110 different tribes. They're mostly the highest resolution in the DNA studies is within the Algonquin-speaking language groups. The Algonquin-speaking language groups have, like I said, about 110 different tribes, and some of them are, for example, the Sioux, the Sac, and the Fox was some of them. All throughout the Northeast,
the Potawatomis,
yeah, the Mohicans, and so forth. And then that's the highest concentration of it. But then as you go further away from the Great Lakes, the concentration starts to get smaller and smaller. When you get out to here in the West, for example, the Navajo have between 6 and 7% of this DNA. The Hopi have about 5 to 6% of the DNA. So there is evidence for here. But what's interesting is that you go south of the Rio Grande, and it gets so minimal that it doesn't show up anymore in the DNA record.
So those are intermarriages?
Most likely, yes. And
intermarriages up into the Algonquin tribes mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah. So you can see that, you know, the highest concentration. Now the LDS scholarly community has been addressing this for some time. And the way that they have gone about addressing this is saying, well, there's a couple of articles that they specifically look for this DNA lineage, which even today, there's only 5 recognized founding lineages among Native American populations throughout the Americas. Haplogroups A, B, C, D, and X. X is the only one that's not a Asiatic lineage. It has been found in almost every Jewish population on earth. It was in the Ashkenazi Jews, the Sephardic Jews, the Libyan, the Moroccan, the Tunisian Jews, and also this Iraqi Jewish population. Now, people say, well, but can you prove DNA with, you know, can you prove the Book of Mormon is true with the DNA? And my answer to that has always been no, because the only way we could actually prove it is if we had DNA samples from Lehi, Sharia, Ishmael, Ishmael's wife. We don't even know Ishmael's wife's name. Okay, so we don't know exactly what their DNA was. We have to make some assumptions in this. We have to assume, for example, that Lehi would have married within his kindred, like most Jewish populations do. It's a very big negative to marry outside of, if you're a Jew, to marry somebody outside of your kindred is a big no-no. In fact, you can see that in the Old Testament when people lose their birthrights and so forth over that kind of thing. Okay, so the bottom line is that we have to make some assumptions that Lehi and his family were actually of Semitic descent. Okay, so we're not trying to go into the whole DNA thing, although I'd love to, but there's a lot more to it than that. But what I wanted to introduce to you today is that began my journey. That was where I kind of came from, is the DNA aspect of it. And as it turns out, I didn't finish talking about what the LDS scholars' response was to this, but the general response was to say, well, there's one of 3 reasons why this DNA could not be related to the Book of Mormon, and they actually came out and said, I need to go back one more time. I keep going back to the same spot, but I haven't said it yet. That is that there were articles that specifically looked in Mesoamerica. Central America, the area most scholars have agreed is the most likely candidate for Book of Mormon lands. And as they looked in the Mesoamerican populations, they found 0 evidence for anything to suggest a Hebraic or a Semitic lineage. There's some, obviously, with more modern admixture, but not anything in the ancient category. And when they've sequenced DNA from the ancient Maya civilization and so forth, there's no evidence whatsoever that there's any Semitic DNA among the Maya civilization.
There's
no X. Yeah.
Zero.
Okay. So that left a pretty big opening for people to say, wait a minute, you know, if the Book of Mormon's true and it happened in Central America, then where's the evidence? And the truth is, there is no evidence in Central America. And so, in an effort to try to explain why this could be the case, LDS scholars basically came up with these 3 different ideas. Number 1 is that Lehi's group was a very small group, 25 to 30 people probably on the ship when they landed. And if they came off the ship and began to immediately intermarry with a already established Asiatic population, it wouldn't take very long before that population, or before their DNA gets basically swallowed up into that population, gets diminished to the point where it would no longer show up in a DNA test. And you can see that actually even today with Native American populations when people are trying to become registered Cherokee, for example, or registered Native American, that they have the same kind of a problem because after, they may have a great-grandfather who is pure-blood Cherokee, okay, but after three or four generations, they're now 132nd, 164th, of that DNA lineage, and so it quickly becomes diluted out of existence. And so that is a reason why this might not show up, okay? And it's a valid reason, okay? From a genetic standpoint, for example, there's Icelandic population where they know there's a certain group of people that came into that population within three or four generations, that DNA type didn't show up anymore in the population because it had been so diluted, okay? Well, back to the Native Americans, though. The thing is that doesn't follow the storyline of the Book of Mormon. When you have the Nephites, Nephi and his family and those who would go with him were being attacked by Laman and Lemuel, and their people are being at least threatened by them. And so they left, and they went and established the land of Nephi. How long were they there? Almost 400 to 500 years. They were in the land of Nephi, multiplying and replenishing under strict commandment by God not to intermarry with their brethren, the Laman and the Laman and Lemuelites, okay? And their Jewish customs and traditions would have disallowed them from marrying with other outside populations, even more so than their brethren. So they were probably there for 400 or 500 years multiplying and replenishing. Okay? Well, that's not going to be a small little nothing DNA population on the Promised Land. Okay, that's a significant genetic force on the Promised Land. And so that's why I was having a hard time accepting their situation there. The other one is that we're talking about genetic bottlenecks. And that is also another valid explanation for why there would not be any DNA evidence to support the claims of the Book of Mormon. What a genetic bottleneck is, probably one of the greatest ones, is Noah's time. You have Adam and Eve and their posterity, and as they continue to grow, then all of a sudden you have the flood, and you go, and now you cut all those lineages off except for those who were on the ark, right? And then, so then they start over. But so all of those other lineages were basically ended. So now you have that starting over. That happened time and again in the Book of Mormon. We have that happen with the Jaredite population, where everybody was killed but one guy. Well, that's not going to leave much of a genetic record, right? Okay. And you have the same kind of thing happening with the Nephites, although they would have shared DNA types with the Lamanites as well. Okay, but you have an extermination event there. But probably the most significant event that has happened in Native American genetics is the depopulation of all of the Americas upon the introduction of diseases for which Native Americans had no natural immunities to after European exploration began. By the best estimates that we have, 85% of the population of the Americas was decimated by these diseases. And that is a huge figure, and that means that there were huge amounts of lineages and DNA evidences and so forth that were destroyed in that process. And so that is a valid explanation, but it still does not address the prophecies in the Book of Mormon that specifically state that there will be a remnant left. It says in the Book of Mormon, it says, and then shall they know that we came out of Jerusalem and that they are descendants of the Jews. How is that going to be possible if there is no genetic remnant? And that's really where we kind of started from. So, because we only have 15 more minutes left, what I want to do is then give you a little introduction to this book. Basically, the research, very quickly. So what happened was, is about after I completed this information, I got involved with this research, and pretty big. I made the mistake of sharing this with some members of my ward and so forth, and said, "What do you think of this?" And they go, are you kidding me? This is huge. Anyway, I didn't get to the third thing, but we'll have to forego that for time. Third thing from the scholars, the third explanation as to why this DNA evidence. So we actually have literally dozens of times LDS scholars stating that, yes, we don't find any evidence to support the claims of the Book of Mormon, but those things cannot disprove the Book of Mormon, but it also can't prove or provide evidence in favor of the Book of Mormon either, thereby making a neutral argument, is what I would call it, a neutral argument basically being one that cannot be proven nor disproven. So it's basically neutral. And that's really where they kind of went, is this neutral argument. My personal feeling is that based on my own personal testimony of the Book of Mormon, that it's not neutral, you know, especially when there are prophecies involved. Either the Book of Mormon is true and the prophecies will be true, or it's not and the prophecies won't. Okay, so I'm more of a literalist when it comes down to some of that kind of stuff. After doing this, I realized that the only location that could be possible and have some, at least, hope of showing forth evidences in favor of the Book of Mormon from a genetic standpoint is North America. And then that led to, what did Joseph Smith know about this? And then that led to going back to the scriptures. And probably the most powerful argument that I have found in this research is the scriptures themselves. When in the Book of Mormon, it speaks of, or not it, but the prophets in the Book of Mormon speak of a latter-day nation that would be established, raised up, lifted up, and set up in the latter days. And they go in and they prophesy about this nation. They said it would be a mighty Gentile nation above all other nations. They talked about it being where the gospel would be restored, where the marvelous work and a wonder would occur. Okay, and also, multiple times in the Book of Mormon, it talks about it as being the land where the New Jerusalem will be built. And of course, we know where that is based on Revelation in the Doctrine and Covenants in section 84, when the Lord tells Joseph Smith exactly where the New Jerusalem is going to be built, in Independence, Missouri. Okay, well, what nation are we talking about here? And that led me to other ideas as far as what are some of the other prophecies. For example, 8 times in the Book of Mormon, it describes this nation specifically in this term, a land of liberty, which of course is talking about Guatemala, not the United States of America, right? Okay, so when you look at that and you realize, you know, there's actually 36 prophecies, and Dr. Bruce Porter and I worked together on a book called Prophecies and Promises, which has been in Desert Book now for about a year and a half or so, and that one is again it's called Prophecies and Promises, the Book of Mormon and the United States of America. And when you read these 36 prophecies, and we'll get to those here in just a second, it's really pretty profound. So what I'm going to do is I've been, the last about 7 or 8 months, I have sequestered myself in my office, and actually beginning in about November of last year, to do what has been the most requested thing that anybody has done in this research over the last 3 years. I'll just tell you a little quickly about what has happened as far as being able to get this information out. So for about a year after I introduced this to my ward members and so forth, and they wanted me to go do presentations and their family members, and we started doing presentations all over the place along the Wasatch Front. For about a year, I went and did presentations. And the problem was is that there's so much information that it really would take about 4 hours to do a presentation. And so we'd start at 7 o'clock in the evening. Sometimes we'd go to 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, people are saying, wait, we got babysitters. We can't wait and stay up this long. And so we finally recorded the presentation at the home of Larry King, actually. It was kind of fun. And created a 4-hour DVD disc called DNA Evidence for Book of Mormon Geography. It wasn't really terribly professionally done. It was just a live recording of a presentation, kind of like what we're doing right now. But we just had a lot of people said, you know, there's so much information, you just can't assimilate it all at one time. So we need to be able to go back and review it and look at it and so forth. And so that's why we recorded it. Then we edited it and so forth. It took a couple months to put that together with volunteer help. And so we ended up releasing this the end of 2007, beginning of 2008. We didn't even ever approach Deseret Book about it because I didn't think it was professional enough quality to be able to do that. And really, that wasn't the goal anyway. The goal was just to be able to have something that people could watch so we didn't have to go 4 hours every time we did a presentation. We started sending those out to folks, unbelievably, we've had over 25,000 of those DVDs go out in the last 2.5 years, 3 years, and it's been all by word of mouth only. Never been in Deseret Book or any other bookstores, but there might have been a couple of smaller bookstores that might have picked them up along the way, but that's really what's happened. It's actually about a year and a half or so ago, the University of Chicago has a divinity school, and it's called the Martin Mary Center for, I can't remember what the acronym basically is, but basically they came out in an article that they published, and they said that this new research has become a, quote, swelling movement, unquote, within the Mormon Church. And that is that the idea that the Book of Mormon may have actually happened here in North America. Now, there's been a significant amount of opposition to this, as you might expect from those who have been promoting the Central American ideas for upwards of 70 years. However, most people that see this with at least a modicum of an open mind really think that this makes a lot more sense, especially when they read the Joseph Smith quotes and so forth. So very quickly, I'm going to just blow through pages from the book. And you can see that the book is right here. It's been, like I said, about a 6-7 month progress or project to do this.
Over it a little bit for some reason. That's not centered in the thing there.
But first off, this quote here by Dr. Roger Kennedy, who's the former director of the Smithsonian's American History Museum. And he has this book called The Hidden Cities, The Discovery and Loss of Ancient North American Civilization. He says, few realize that some of the oldest, largest, and most complex structures of ancient archaeology were built of earth, clay, and stone right here in America in the Ohio and Mississippi valleys. From 6,000 years ago until quite recently, North America was home to some of the most highly advanced and well-organized civilizations in the world, complete with cities, roads, and commerce. That has not been known until about the last 10 or 15 years. And why is that the case? If this was such a big civilization, why is it that nobody knows about it? Well, that's exactly what we were addressing in this documentary film. It's called The Lost Civilizations of North America. This film has 17 scholars in it, only 3 of which are LDS. Okay, and Dr. Roger Kennedy is one of them. We have Dr. Alice Keough, who's with anthropology at Harvard University. We've got historians and geneticists and so forth, and they're all talking about why it is that almost nobody in America and virtually nobody within the church knows about this highly advanced civilization.
We destroyed it.
What's that?
We destroyed it.
Well, yeah, we destroyed it. But a lot of things have been destroyed, but they're still known. There was a willful and wanton destruction of this history by some individuals, and if we had time, we could go into it, but we don't have time to do that. But this documentary goes through and explains that, and it has to do with political, scientific, and governmental agendas, and trying to keep Native Americans from being recognized as an advanced civilization so that their rights could continue to be taken from them and denied them, and their lands could be taken from them for American Manifest Destiny doctrine, but also for disproving Joseph Smith and the claims of the Book of Mormon. They talked about a highly advanced civilization. Because if it could ever be shown that Native Americans had the capability of metallurgy, of smelting, of a written language, of building massive cities with ditches and earth banks and all that kind of stuff that supports the claims of the Book of Mormon, then it would be very difficult for at least two of these three people. By the way, they were one of them was John Wesley Powell. There was Lewis Henry Morgan and Ephraim George Squires. John Wesley Powell, these men were the heads of some of the most powerful and influential organizations in America at the time. For example, they were the heads of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. They were the head of the Bureau of Ethnology, the head of the Smithsonian Institute. John Wesley Powell became very engaged in politics as well, and became very well known as a great conservationist and so forth. Okay, well, two of them, John Wesley Powell and Ephraim George Squires, had fathers who were Methodist ministers in Palmyra, New York in 1830. And obviously would have been influenced by this young upstart prophet by the name of Joseph Smith and his Golden Bible. Would have known all about that. And they began, they became these powerful, influential men who began to discredit and do anything they could to try to diminish the influence of this highly advanced civilization. All right, so very quickly here, I'm just going to show you some pages from the book. That's really all we're going to have time left to do. So one of the big questions is, where is the promised land of the Book of Mormon? Because if we can identify where the promised land is, then we know where the Book of Mormon took place. Because we know 33 times the Book of Mormon continues to reiterate the fact that they are on the promised land. Well, there's actually two promised lands. When I say promised lands, meaning lands that are promised for the gathering of the house of Israel in the latter days. One of them is Jerusalem. The other one is New Jerusalem. There's only two promised lands. When Christ came to America, this book will tell you about that and so forth, is that when he came to America, there were only these two locations, what they talked about. There's the New Jerusalem. There's prophecies and promises. Some of those prophecies are, for example, where it says it would be a land of liberty. It said it would be a land choice above all other lands. It would be a land cursed because of wickedness. It would be the land of the New Jerusalem. It would be a land of prosperity and security. Which all, of course, sounds very much like Guatemala, doesn't it? The land of prosperity and security is the nation of Guatemala, of course, if you're a Mesoamerican believer. Okay? I typically don't agree with that. I've been down there. I've seen it. It is nothing like the United States of America.
Belize.
What's that?
Belize.
Yeah, well, maybe it's Belize is the one. Okay. I mean, you get an idea of how prosperous and secure Guatemala is when you have Mexican, nationals who are constantly trying to come over the border into what is the United States. But on the south side of the border, south side of Mexico, the Guatemalans are trying desperately to get into Mexico. Okay. But they have a little bit different policy. That's a shoot-on-sight policy. If they try to cross the border, they will be killed. Mexican police do not mess with that stuff. Okay? And so that's how prosperous and secure it is down in Guatemala. And people say, well, what about the church growth in Guatemala? And isn't this an indication of the blossoming prophecies? And my answer to that is how many new snakes have been added to Guatemala in the last 10 years? Minus one. Minus one snake. Okay? So if that's the blossoming, I don't know. The blossoming has gone off the rose now, as far as that's concerned. But anyway, what nation is still the highest baptizing nation on earth in sheer numbers?
The
United States of America is.
3 minutes.
Yep. All right. So we talked about this new nation. Was it a free people? These are some of the prophecies. A land of promise. Was it a land of liberty? Talks about all those things in the Book of Mormon. What did Joseph Smith know? In the Wentworth letter, he talks about how he was informed concerning the Aboriginal inhabitants of this country. You have the American Revivalist account, which also talks about the Western tribes of Indians. Joseph Smith talked about. Joseph Smith seemed to know a lot about where this was at, and every time we have a statement from Joseph Smith himself where we know it was him speaking or writing, every single time it's about North America. The only times that there was a Mesoamerica setting talked about or discussed is in articles in the Times and Seasons in 1842 with unknown authorship, unknown who it was that wrote the articles, and then they've held those things up and ignored the ones, for example, the Zelda accounts in Zion's Camp and so forth. They've held those things up as evidence in favor of the Book of Mormon and ignored Joseph Smith's clear statements, where we know it was him that was writing these things. It's absolutely amazing to me to see how that's gone about. The Zelf Mound, those of you who don't know about the Zelf Mound, basically, you'll have to read it in the book if you don't have time, but here's your artifacts that were archaeologically removed from the Zelf Mount, carbon dated to 250 AD plus or minus 100 years. That means up to about 350 AD. That's right in that time frame, exactly where it would have been expected based on Joseph Smith's statements of this white Lamanite fellow who was killed in one of the final battles between the Lamanites and the Nephites. We have Joseph's letters to Emma and so forth, where he says, "The whole of our journey in the midst of so large a company of social and sincere men, wandering over the plains of the Nephites." They're on Zion's camp, and they're wandering over the plains of the Nephites. "Recounting occasionally the history of the Book of Mormon, roving over the mounds of that once beloved people of the Lord." Who were the beloved people of the Lord? The mound builders. People who built the mounds. Nephite altar, Adamon de Yaman. We know where the hill Cumorah is located. There is no indication in the Book of Mormon that there were more than one hill. In fact, Joseph Fielding Smith makes very clear statements that actually this was a kind of a bad thing, you know, talking about having two hills Cumorah. In fact, I love this statement right here from Elder Markey Peterson. He says, "I do not believe that there was two hill Cumorahs, one in Central America and the other way up in New York. For the convenience of the prophet Joseph Smith, so the poor boy would not have to work, would not have to walk clear to Central America to get the gold plates." Okay. This is actually in a General Conference address in 1953. Then we have missions to the Lamanites, which I already talked to you about. The visit to the Sac and the Fox Indians. And then finally, DNA evidence here. Who are the remnant Lamanites today? And what I can say is that, I'll just get back to the end here, because although we got started about 15 minutes late because of the audiovisual problems here. Let's see, River Sidon, where it's seasons in the Book of Mormon. This book talks about all these different things, tempests and whirlwinds, Lamanite hunting lifestyle, about bison, the two civilizations that match up with the Book of Mormon time frames and mound building, some of their achievements. They were some of the highest advanced civilizations on the planet at the time.
And golfers.
And they were golfers, yes, indeed. And then you know, they built their cities with ditches and earth bank structures and palisades of timbers, just like they talk about here. And then we get into roads. They had roads between their thing. They built out of wood, just like the Book of Mormon talks about. They had walls of stone, but they had no cities made of stone. Did you know that nowhere in the Book of Mormon does it mention any cities built out of stone? Zero. No temples built out of stone. In fact, it specifically says the temples were made out of wood. Okay.
Rod, I'm sorry to cut you off, but there is another session needing to come in and get set up. We apologize for the technical difficulties in the beginning, but I think you'll be around for a little while, and if people want to chat with you about your book and about your research, you can do that out in the foyer. There's plenty of lounge areas you can do that. Rod, thank you very much.
Just one question.
I think we better get moving out and let this other group get in.
At the very end of this, at the book, there's the two most powerful pages is the 45 evidences of the Book of Mormon, or correlations of the Book of Mormon. There's never been this level of evidence ever for Book of Mormon geography. We can talk about it out there. Thank you.